Good to be with you again. We're talking about avoiding pitfalls during parenting, the type of things that are easy for us to fall into, sometimes by habit, sometimes by not thinking about it better, sometimes because we're tired, sometimes because there's stress. We've all made mistakes as parents. As I've been up here this weekend, it's good for me to go and do this series because it reminds me of some things I need to tighten up when I get back home. We've all made mistakes as parents. Fortunately, God has made children rather resilient, but we don't want to keep making those mistakes. And so if, as we see areas where we can improve for our children, let's do that. Number 12. After having gone through a number of other ones, such as failing to discipline, expecting bad behavior, rewarding bad behavior, training children to not obey instructions, giving them a calm voice, all the other things we've been talking about, we're going to come now to this one. And we're going to switch tonight from a lot of our lessons have been focused more on very small children. Even like a one-year-old or a two-year-old or three or four, five, six, seven, eight, that type of thing. For most of what we'll be talking tonight, we're going to start switching more to like adolescents and teenagers. And this is important, not just early and later, but kind of across the board, but it's a serious mistake. It's mistaking taking them to church for bringing them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Please turn to Ephesians chapter 6. Now I want you to tell me if I read this verse right. Please have your Bible open so you can check. Everybody open your Bible, please. Ephesians chapter 6. I want you to tell me if I read it right. Ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but take them to church. Matt says I did not read it right. That's not what it says. It says, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but nurture them in the chastening and admonition of the Lord. And do you remember Deuteronomy 6? Did it say, you shall take your children to church on Sunday and to Bible class on Wednesday and tell them to do their lesson? Is that what it says? That's not what it says. Several years ago, I was with one brother and we went to go pick up another brother, and I'd never met him. I was out of town doing a series of meetings, and this fellow had been in the hospital, and so we went to go pick him up, and I met this brother, and we were talking, and after the processes he'd gone through at the hospital, he needed a ride home, and we're carrying him home. But he got to talking about his family, and it was very sad, and it was sad on two levels. First level was this. I was in my early 40s at the time. He said, I have four children, and most of them were a little older or a little younger than me, so kind of basic age group. He said, I have four children. Not one of them is faithful. This is very sad. But then the next thing he said was really sad. He said, I don't know what happened. We took them to church all those years. The first thing that was sad was that none of his children were serving the Lord. The second thing that was sad was how obvious it was, but he had missed it. I don't know what happened. I took them to church. If you took them to church and Bible class on Sunday morning, if you have, as a lot of brethren do, some Bible classes for all ages on Sunday morning, they're going to get about, what, 40, 45 minutes in there? If you take them on Wednesday night, they're going to get what? 40, 45 minutes, and then they're going to hear a couple sermons. But, you know, if they're sitting on the back row drawing and doodling and stuff like that, or in some places now sitting back there texting on their phone, they're not paying much attention to that. But let's just take the time back for a moment. How much time does the world get at our children? How much time does TV get at our children? How much time do other kids in the neighborhood from non-Christian homes get at our children? How much time does the school system, with sometimes its godless agendas, get at our children? How much time does the community get at our children? How much time does the internet get at our children? Or video games or whatever? Should we think that a little bit of Bible class twice a week is all the spiritual nourishment that you need? If my child dies of malnutrition, you know, you hear about in the news these terrible things where, you know, parents find, you know, parents haven't been feeding a child, had it locked in a room or something, and the police come and they get the child to the hospital and the parents are arrested and stuff. You hear about those kind of cases? Imagine if my child is in the hospital in critical condition and malnutrition, and I say, I don't know what happened. I fed him Sunday dinner all those years. I also fed him on Wednesday nights. You'd say, well, that wasn't enough. He needs more. It doesn't mean that everything is going to be, all right, now sit down, we're going to have a Bible study at this hour. That's good, but there's also just those things of what? Daily lessons that you see and you say, look at that. You know, what's happened there? Think about what parable of Jesus does that remind you of? Or maybe going by a work crew, prison crew, cleaning up the things. You know why those people are there? You know, some people's parents care enough about them to train them to do what's right and wrong, and some people's parents don't. And that's one of the reasons. In other words, you just take life lessons, and you let them be learning and learning and learning. Mistake number 13, thinking if we don't allow this, they might rebel and leave the church. You ever maybe gone to a friend's house and maybe there's walking down the hall, maybe a bedroom door is open and there's some posters in the room that you just would not expect to be in a godly person's room. Maybe there's, you know, clothes being worn that should not be worn. Maybe there's other behavior going on. Maybe there's t-shirts with words and images and you're wondering, why are they allowing that? And maybe you're a close friend or a brother or sister in Christ and might be your visiting relative somewhere or whatever, or people around here, and you might say, you know, that's okay with you for her to walk out dressed like that? Or you allow him to have those kind of posters in his room? Or that, I remember one time I went over to families when I was a kid, invited over, there was a new family at church, and I was invited over there for the afternoon. I go in. His drug paraphernalia is right on top of the dresser in his room. He's not even hiding it from his parents. It's just like, and you know what sometimes those parents say? Well, if we don't allow this, they might rebel and leave the church. Well, I know that skirt's awful short, but if I insist on longer, I don't want to rebel and leave. I know he's back there smoking pot, but if I say too much, he might rebel and leave the church. Do you see the problem with that? There's several problems with that, I suppose, or at least more than one. Let's start with this. What good is being in the church if they aren't in the Lord? The church doesn't save people. The church is the people that needed to be saved and have come to Jesus to be saved. Jesus is the Savior. The church wasn't nailed to the cross. Jesus was nailed to the cross. He's the one we need to be serving. He's the one we need his blood. And if we're not following him, it doesn't matter if somebody else lets us sit on a pew. Was Corinth letting, there was a man in Corinth who was having an affair with his father's wife. And you know what the Corinthians were letting him do? Be right there. How much good did that do with that man? James 4, verse 4. Do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God? And think about entertainment, attire, interests, different things. You know, if we get so interested in one thing that it starts clouding out the Lord. Old Barney Fife said it, and they were kind of making fun of Barney, but I like Barney's idea. One time he's trying to give Andy parenting advice and said, nick it! Nick it in the bud! And there's a lot of things that need to be nicked in the bud. There might be something that's not wrong in and of itself. But you know what? In your home, you're the parents. Here's God's laws. You get to have your own family laws as well, okay? For instance, if you say take out the garbage on Tuesday, your kids don't go, that's not in the Bible. You know, if you say no shoes on the new carpet, that's not in the Bible. You can make rules in your own home. And when you start seeing an area that's starting to be a problem, for the rich young ruler, he needed to get rid of his money. Did Jesus tell everybody to do that? Zacchaeus had a lot of money. Did Jesus tell Zacchaeus to get rid of all of his money? No. So if somebody starts saying, I want to get a guitar. Dad, I'd like to play the guitar. And he gets a guitar, and he's playing some wholesome music, and he's, you know, it's not taking over his life, and he's enjoying it, and it's bringing joy to others and stuff. Is that okay? Yeah. But what if he starts not caring about anybody except the best guitarist? You know, if the Apostle Paul came by, he wouldn't care. You know, and all he wants to do is about, he wants to start a rock band. And he wants to be on the pop charts and everything. You know what? Nick, you know, there's some things that need to be stopped. And let's talk about clothing for just a few minutes here. Clothing choices. In Genesis chapter 3, after they realized they were naked, what does it say Adam and Eve did? They sewed leaves together. Sometimes they had a pain, there's just a fig leaf or two. No, they sewed leaves together and made like a girdle with it. So the Hebrew word means something that went around. But after God spoke to them, what did God do? He put some clothes on. Now, there's a coast not far from here. And I bet you that those fig leaves covered more in some areas than what's being worn down there. Exodus chapter 28, look at verse 42. This is clothing for the priest. And there was different things in this priestly garment. Exodus chapter 28, verse 42. Let's start with verse 40. For Aaron's sons, you shall make coats and sashes and caps. You shall make them for glory and beauty. During the day, I don't wear one of these, and I don't wear one of these. I don't particularly like these, but there's kind of a standard dress for business occasions or preaching or teaching or different things, and, you know, so I want to show that I'm taking it seriously. But this is not necessary to be decent, to have this on. Nobody looks at somebody without a tie. Oh, he doesn't have a tie. The purpose of the caps and the sashes was what? Look at the end of verse 40. Everybody see it? Glory and beauty. Was Were the caps to cover the flesh of their nakedness? No. The purpose of that clothing was to glory and beauty. Someday they'll wonder why we wear these. Verse 41. You shall put them on Aaron your brother and on his sons. Now look at verse 42. You shall make for them linen undergarments. And what's the purpose of this? To cover their nakedness. You shall make for them linen undergarments to cover their naked flesh. They shall reach from the hips to the thighs. That's not from below the hips, but not including the hips, to above the thighs and not including the thighs. That wouldn't do anything. It's like when Job had boils from his feet to his head. That meant what? He was covered up with it. So, from the hips to the thighs, that's what the men in the priesthood wore for what purpose? To cover their naked flesh, make them this. Should that cause us to pause at some of the things people run around in public with today? And I'm not saying run around in nothing but that. I'm just saying we've got people dressing in a way in public that they would be more covered in their underwear. There's something wrong there. 1 Timothy 2 talks about modest apparel, and there it's not talking about the skimpiness of it, but just show-offness of it. John 21, verse 7. Did you know there is one passage in the Bible about how somebody attired themselves to go swimming and go to the beach? One passage alone. It's John 21. Here it is. Verse 3. Simon Peter says, I go a fishing. They said, we'll go with you. I imagine that's been done down here a few times. Somebody said, I'm going fishing, and somebody else said, I'm going with you. Well, these were professional fishermen. And these professional fishermen, they're not out there for recreation. They're out there working. And they've been out there all night working. And while they're working, they have taken off their garments, so what they would have on is an undergarment. Would have been a cloth wrapped around like this. And it's just a bunch of men working on a boat. That's fine. But in the morning, Jesus calls from the shore. And then in verse 7, John said, it's the Lord. Now everybody look at verse 7, middle of the verse. When Simon Peter heard it was the Lord, what did he do? Look in your Bible, John 21, verse 7. What did he do? He put his clothes on, jumped into the water, and swam to the shore. Sometimes we excuse exhibitionism by saying what we're doing. And, you know, I'm glad to now be able, you can go into Walmart places and get some basketball shorts like they wear, NBA length that are down here. You guys remember what the guys were wearing in the 70s in the NBA? What was the purpose of that? Now, if anybody said, well, we have to be able to move and jump. Have you turned on a professional NBA game lately? They're able to move and jump very well with something decent.
Proverbs 7:10 talks about the attire of a harlot. 1 Peter 3:3, don't make your appearance all about the outside, but about the inside. Let me give you three quick illustrations, and then we'll move on. I'm going to show you two types of things you might get in the mail. Everybody knows what that is. That's a security envelope, right? What's the purpose of that envelope?
So that that needs to be observable to the eye is clear to see, and that which is private business is covered up, right? Now, what about a transparent mailer? They're not trying to cover up much. Why? They're wanting this all to be seen. There's a fence. That's a nice fence. Looks like a quality fence. Looks like an attractive fence. What's the purpose of that fence? There's a swimming pool right there.
is to keep prying eyes from looking in there, right? What's the purpose of that, Phoenix? Is that to keep prying eyes from looking in? No, that's to show off. He doesn't want you not to see. He wants you to see. Look at my place. One more. Or just this type of thing. By the way, if you check at almost any jail, if you've ever done gone in to teach people at jail and look at the rules, then this is the type of thing that is not allowed. It doesn't mean that that's a group of Christians. It means they don't want the problems associated with this. But I gave away the second slide. There's a gift. It's wrapped. That's attractive. Here's a different type of rabbit. Too many people are dressing like they're Oscar Mayer fans. We ought not be doing that. And when our children are little, if we start saying, oh, she's got six, we'll put the little swimsuit on her, send her out there to the public pool. She's just a baby. She's just a baby. She's just 13. She's just 14. Men, do you remember when we were 14? Did we look at the 14-year-old girls and just say, oh, that's just a little girl? No, 14-year-old girls, they were girls. She's just 15. She's just 16. And then what, at 16? Now you're going to have to start covering up? What sense of modesty has been installed? If she's used to having on next to nothing in front of the public and members of the opposite sex, one thing, where's going to be her sense of modesty when she goes out on a date if she's comfortable like that?
Our job is not to be like the world. Mistake number 14, assuming cultural norms. You know, here's my neighbor, here's my best friend, here's my cousin, here's my co-worker, here's what they do, so I'll do that too. Well, that's okay on things like, where do you get your oil changed? Oh, they've got a real good job over here. Where do you get the same place? Yeah. And where do you go for butcher meat? Oh, you go up there? Okay, things that don't have moral issues, that might make sense. But on things that matter, we don't need to be taking our cues from people that don't care about God. And so on raising children, you know what's normal? How many? If you've heard this phrase, the terrible twos. Have you ever heard that phrase? Does that make sense to you? Man, two-year-olds are fun. There's some trouble and there's some work, but that is wonderful. How about rebellious teens? Was Josiah a rebellious teen? What age did he set his heart to serve God? Age 16. Timothy.
If 1 Timothy is written after release from Paul's first imprisonment, which would have been in the early 60s, and then he's arrested again, or 2 Timothy and such. So if 1 Timothy is written somewhere around 63 or something like that, have you ever thought about how old Timothy was when Paul picked him up? Because if in the 60s, remember what Paul and how Timothy addressed in the 60s, don't let any man despise your youth. If he was a youth in the 60s, how old was he in the late 40s when Paul picked him up? He may have been a teenager. Are all teenagers rebellious? I've enjoyed seeing the young men here. I enjoyed Sunday
watching the young men here get up and lead singing. And just the way they conduct themselves and the respectfulness. And just, that's a good thing to see. But if we accept as cultural norms, say, well, that's the way it's going to be, that's what's culturally common. Well, I'll tell you what. It is culturally common in the world for teens to be rebellious. You know what else is culturally common? To turn into ungodly adults, right? If I want to put up with what's culturally common here, I might as well get ready for what's culturally common here.
or aim higher. Josiah and Timothy, we just talked about. I'm not going to take time to talk about Jonadab. But just think about wisdom things, even Lot, when he ends up going down and ending up towards Sodom and Gomorrah. What type of decisions was Lot basing his thoughts on? Where's a good influence for my family? Is that what he's thinking about? No, he's focused on other things, and it ends up endangering his family. Mistake number 15, going into defense mode when our children are wrong. So, like one time, a good friend of mine came up to me, and she let me know, "Scott, I need to let you know, Luke is not doing well in class. He keeps getting out of his seat and he's crawling under the table." Now, I appreciated that. That's my friend. She cares about my kids. She's a friend of mine. She's telling me what she knows I want to know. Because who doesn't know what Luke's doing when he's right away from me? I don't know. So she's my friend for doing that. So I'm going, thank you. Unfortunately, if you're a school teacher, and even if you're not a school teacher, a lot of people will recognize this, right? 60 years ago, 50 years ago, 70 to 50 years ago, somebody in this community got in trouble at school. Where were they also going to be in trouble? At home. Lucky Stoker, a friend of mine, he was, I wish you could have known Lucky. He died several years ago. He was looked a bit like Hulk Hogan, except he was from West Virginia. He was bald and had a big white mustache. Lucky could just walk on his hands about as good as I could walk on my feet. He was a pretty tough guy. But he was from the hills of West Virginia. And he told me about his first day of school. And he said, I went in there and sat down the first grade. My mom took me and left. And I sit there. And after a little while, he said, I decided I didn't like it. I said, I got up and I left. He walked back to the house and he said his mother grabbed him by the ear and whooped him all the way to the schoolhouse. And the teacher said, whoop him some more. And he said, I didn't do that again. But there was a time when, you know, authority was respected, and if a parent let the child's mother or father know what they've done, the parent appreciated that knowledge, he was in trouble. What's way too typical now? The parent denies it or blames it on the teacher. So I got a friend of mine, he drives a school bus, and he said, I had a kid. He was taking a permanent marker, a Sharpie, and he was writing on part of the bus. And so he has to call the parent. He says, ma'am, you know, your child was, you know, marking on the bus. She said, that's not my child. My child wouldn't do that. Yes, ma'am, he did. No, my child would not do that. You must be mistaken. It's somebody else. Ma'am, would you like to see the video? What did you do to make him do it? And that's how quick she changed. It was deny, 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 deny. I've got the video. It's your fault. The whole idea of stopping in between, my son's guilty of this. That's not going to be touched on. Why? So when we start defending, denying, redirecting blame, in 1 Timothy 5:21, Paul told Timothy, do all things without partiality. If when your kid does it, that child's ungrateful. If when your kid does it, that child's irresponsible. If when your kid does it, that child's lazy. And when my kid does it, that wasn't my kid. What did you do to make him do it? You know what that is? That's partiality. And mom or dad may think, well, they're my child. I'm going to be partial to my child. Let me tell you. to give your child the advantage, you're doing exactly the opposite. Because there are some other parents that are loving their kids enough to deal with them when they've been wrong. And when you do this, don't be surprised when you end up having to bail them out, literally. Isaiah, woe to those that call evil good and evil good evil. If it's your child or somebody else's child, oh, it's evil, it's my child. Oh, no, that was good. No, don't do that. And some of us were talking about the other day, I don't remember which of us, but it was funny, some funny stories about, I think it was over at your place, Matt, situations where somebody has gotten fired and then their mom comes in to try to talk the boss or the owner into giving her boy his job back. You see, that's just really sums up what's going on there, because he was brought into the world, and that kind of a mom, she's been doing what? Making him have too high of an image of himself, protecting him too much, you know, not letting him be blamed for things, and all, oh, not my boy, not my boy, and he can get away with stuff, knowing his mom's going to do that, and now he's a grown man, maybe 30 years old, and I think you were also telling about some cases where you know, situations like that. That's sad. Are those moms doing their children favors? No. And do you remember when the prodigal son came to his senses? The last words before, when he came to himself, the very last words before that was, no one gave him anything. So, when our children are wrong, they're wrong. And you know what? When we are wrong, we're wrong. And this goes back to the apology thing. When I've handled a situation wrong with one of my kids, and then I realize it, what do I need to do? I need to take responsibility for that and apologize. And if I don't, is it going to fool my boy that I was calm and handled that the best way? No, it's not going to fool him. We need to exemplify taking responsibility and apologizing. If you start a pattern of bailing out, don't be surprised if they continue to come to expect it. Mistake number 16, failing to train humility. And I added this point after a couple of young men that I saw. And let me tell you what they had in common. Both were from families that in most ways were very dedicated in their service. Both came from families that were always at church. Both came from families that went to extra efforts to do things for the family and have spiritual emphasis. Both boys had either intellectual or other or both abilities that could have been used in the worship service. Both families in some ways were extremely conservative, and both boys ended up just arrogant. I remember one father, and you know, he talked about how smart his boy was. He wanted his boy to be doing things. His boy was so smart and everything. And that young man said to me one time, he said, when I look around at other people, he just described the sense in which, I won't give exactly the words that he gave, but it just, he just looks at other people as if they're less than him, is basically what it was. And one day his father came to see me. They weren't worshiping with us at that time. But he came to see me and he said, he was having trouble with his son. And he was worried about it. I said, well, let me ask you some questions. I said, Is he intelligent?
Oh, yeah.
Is he zealous?
Oh, yeah.
Is he conscientious? On certain type of things.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm setting this all up for the question that you need to think about. And I said, is he humble? And the dad went,
no.
It's kind of clear to us. We need to see that too. He came back, I remember one point, and just all the big words and just the arrogance. Another boy. He came back, and I talked to him when he was a teenager. And I said, you've got an ego problem. You know what his response was? Well, I'm a teenager. Of course I do. After he'd been away at college and some other things, and there was, when he went away to college, I got a call from a preacher. I assumed he had given my name as a reference. I got a call from a preacher. And he said, yeah, we're thinking about having so-and-so work with us down here at this church. I said, well, I said, he comes from a good family. I said, you know, he's got a number of qualities. He's got this and this. I said, he's got an ego problem. And the preacher laughed. He didn't seem to think that was going to be a problem. About a year later, this young man comes back to the state I was in, and he was upset. You told two different preachers I had an ego problem. No, I told one. Well, two different preachers have told me I had an ego problem. Well, I wasn't one that told the other one. But one fellow tried working with him and saw what it was. And, well, when he came back one time, and I remember, oh, yeah, his mother wanted us to use him more. Since we weren't, people were not impressed with him and didn't appreciate his conduct. They ended up leaving him going somewhere else. But one of the last times he did anything there, he was asked to leave the city. And he just, and I remember talking, he said, one of the sisters talked to him, and he came and talked to him, what did you think? And I got talking to him about, remember how you thanked me for this other thing? He said, yeah, I'd like to be the center of attention.
The Pharisees were condemned by Jesus Christ because they were doing their works to be seen by men. When we're encouraging good behavior, encouraging learning their Bible, encouraging, so they learn all the books of the Bible.
Good, good.
You know, they do a good job on leading the song.
Good.
They do a good job on good, good. That's all good. But if we forget to do that, you know what that can become? What a waste. Proverbs chapter 6. There are six, yea, seven things that are an abomination to God. What is the very first thing on the list? A haughty. What was one of the biggest problems of the Pharisees? Their pride. Be aware of a culture that celebrates youth and lacks respect for its elders. And put all your children to the fool test. Sometimes our children are foolish. And there's a fool test. It's in the book of Proverbs. You want to know what it is? You've read it a bunch of times.
Correct a wise man, and he will be wiser still. You know, rebuke a wise man, he'll love you for it. That type of principle is in there. But what does it also say over and over and over? Fools hate correction. Over and over in the book of Proverbs, fools hate correction. So every once in a while, do the fool test on your children. Just go through and analyze. You know, in a lab, you dip something in there, it's up. I don't mean correct them to see if they do, but just think about how they've been responding to correction. So if you got four kids and you say, let's see, does this one hate to be corrected? And one of you is going to have to be bad. I won't hear anybody. he's always gets all sold up and mad and argues about it. That boy just flunks the full test. So if you got four boys, and guess what? Maybe last year that one was flunking it, but you got it straightened out. And hopefully by next week, this one will be back to not being a bull. But by the way, James volunteered there too. For those of you that didn't, I said I needed to volunteer, and he volunteered for it. So in other, you apply that full test. By the way, we can do the full test in ourselves too. Fell in the mirror. Does he hate to be corrected? If so, I just failed the pool test. So what do you do? Well, get rid of some of the pride and arrogance. Start looking at yourself more honestly and realizing, you know what? They were right about that. And say, if Brad talked to me about something, I think, you know what? I appreciate Brad pointing it out, and he's right. And I'm going to listen to that. And now how do I feel about it? It's like, my brother has helped me. My brother's corrected me. That's the wise person. Number 17, focusing on home income instead of home outcome. Sometimes we're so busy, you know, if dad's working all the time, mom's working all the time, dad's taking all the time, and the kids are just, maybe they're in daycare, maybe they're home alone or whatever, but look, we gotta get our stuff. We gotta get our stuff. I remember David Hartson years ago was talking to a family because the family was stressed out, they were having problems, there was problems with the kids, there was problems between husband and wife, after both working full time and everything, so much time away from home, and then by the time they got home, there wasn't enough to invest in each other and everything, and they're stressed out. And David said, well, it seems like a lot of this is because you don't have the time that you need as a family. Well, have you considered, you know, changing your setup here of how you're both working all these hours? And they said, you know, not just dad, but mom working full-time out and everything and away so much. And they said, what? And give up all this? And what were they pointing at? The biggest physical stuff. Proverbs 15, verse 17. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil with it. Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than fattened ox served with hatred. It's the home, not the house. It's the family, not the stuff. Quickly, I just want to hit a few of these and we're going to stop tonight. We've talked about some of these before. A lot of these could be a sermon in and of themselves. Don't, the mistake of underestimating threats. It's, you know, if you go for a walk in the Antarctic without a sweater or gloves or mittens or something, you're going to die. And, oh, I didn't know it's going to be that cold. There are threats out there. And if we underestimate them, we're asking for trouble. Don't underestimate the corruption from the entertainment media. Don't underestimate the corruption from the internet, pornography. We talked about that early in the week. Don't underestimate the number of offenders and predators that there are out there. You remember a few years ago, there was the woman that had been missing for years, and they found her in the backyard of this guy under a tarp. You remember that story? She'd been kidnapped from Utah, and she'd been there for years. I Googled in on that address, and you could see from the sky, there was the blue tarp. And there's a site where you can see the sex offenders in the neighborhood. And yep, it was a sex offender right there. And she had escaped because I thought, get out of there, climb the fence. You know, but there's other things going on, I'm sure. But even if she had climbed the fence, gone to this house, nobody home, and crossed the street and knocked on that door, that was also a registered sex offender. There are a lot of them. Don't underestimate that. Don't just think that it's safe for our children to be in anybody's home. It's not. Don't underestimate certain educational agendas. Don't underestimate a culture that, a medical community that is trained on a Darwinian theory that says sin is not real, God is not real, we are an accidental arrangement of chemicals. So if we're an accidental arrangement of chemicals and I'm not behaving as I should, the easy solution is going to be what? Adjust as chemicals. There are medicines that are life-saving. There are medicines that need it. But a lot of bad behavior is now just being called, you know, disorder this or syndrome that and such. Be wary of everything brushed under there. And when people start telling you, oh, your child needs to be this, be very wary of that type of thing. Be wary of feminism agendas and the blurring of gender roles. Let's raise up our young men to be men. And let's raise up our young girls to be ladies. And for those both to be respected by each other. And declining standards. And that is where we will stop. Thank you for your attention this evening. If you need to respond to the gospel, won't you do so as we stand and sing.